S-2356, Trista Allman versus School District of Stanley Boyd et al. Arguing for the plaintiff, Trista Allman, is Ann Knox Bauer. Ms. Bauer, you may proceed.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Ann Knox Bauer, representing the plaintiff appellant, Trista Allman. This morning, this court has to decide whether a school district is entitled to recreational immunity when a student is injured on its playground during recess, during school hours. Facts of this case take us back to February of 1998, when Trista Allman was an 11-year-old student attending Stanley Boyd Schools. She was attending the school at that time, and she went outside for recess, which was in the middle of the day. The recess was approximately 15 minutes long. During recess, she and a few other students were jumping on a snow hill, which has been described as being 10 feet away from the door where the students came out of the school for recess, and was described as being approximately 2 to 3 feet tall, with a run of about 50 feet going downhill. And the students thought it was fun to jump on top of the snow hill and then slide down on their rear ends to the bottom of the snow hill. The students were doing this for approximately 5 minutes when Trista Allman caught her leg in a hole that had formed at the bottom of the snow hill. She suffered a fractured femur from that incident. What's interesting is that 3 days prior to Trista Allman's injury on that snow hill, the head playground supervisor had taken a look at that hill and had noticed that a hole was forming at the bottom of the hill where the students were sliding down. She recognized it as being a dangerous condition that the students shouldn't play on anymore. The action that she took was to tell the other playground supervisors, giving them a directive that they were to not let the students play on that hill any longer because there was a hole forming at the bottom of it and she felt that it was a dangerous condition where a child could be injured. Despite the directive that was given to the other playground supervisors that day, Trista Allman was allowed to play on the snow hill, resulting in her injury.
Ms. Knox Bauer, let me ask you if I might, how significant is it in your opinion that the injury took place during recess rather than after school was over for the day? Does that really make any difference?
I think it does, Your Honor, because what we're looking at in terms of the test, when the court analyzes the definition of what is a recreational activity, we're looking at the nature, the purpose, and the consequence of the activity, as well as the purpose of the premises that exists in terms of the school. And why that's important, it's an important distinction to make there, because what we have is in the definition of the statute is that immunity is given for anyone that is injured when they enter premises for purposes of a recreational activity. And what we're looking at with Trista Allman's case is that she entered the premises for a reason other than a recreational activity. She was there for attending school and receiving an education. And the point that is pointed out by Your Honor is that if the injury had occurred, let's say that Trista Allman lived right next door to the school, and that she came over on the weekend to play on this snow hill, I think we would have a wholly different case than what we have here, where we have this injury occurring during recess.
So you think it's significant that this occurred during the school day when she's required to be there?
That's correct. And I think the same situation would apply to during the lunch hour, where students are required to be in a cafeteria during lunch hour. And furthermore, outside, when students are waiting to get on the bus, it's still part and parcel of the school thing.
So the same injury could have happened at 6 o'clock in the evening, but then recreational immunity would have kicked in under 895. That's the position that you're taking.
That's correct. I think what's key there is coming onto the property for purposes of. And this is consistent with the test that this court has established, thinking, in fact, of the Linville case, where we're talking about the nature, the purpose, and the consequence of the activity. And basically, there are two reasons why the trial court erred when it granted recreational immunity in this case. The first reason, of course, is that Trista Ullman was not engaged in a recreational activity that day when she was injured. The second reason is that we have a Wisconsin statute, which is in Chapter 120, which is pointed out in the amicus brief filed by Waddle, that flies directly in the face of what is said in the recreational immunity statute. If the court recalls from the brief that was filed by the by amicus party, we're finding there that the language of the statute says that a school board has the duty to maintain and repair the school grounds to keep them safe. Let's go back to the first reason why recreational immunity doesn't apply here, because Trista Ullman was not engaged in a recreational activity at the time of her injury. We're looking at the test we have. We're looking at the intrinsic nature of why she was on the school grounds.
Counsel, I want to make sure I understand your arguments. I thought that your arguments were that the issues set forth in your brief, or an argument on page 5 of your brief, that the trial court erred when it dismissed plaintiff's complaint because the doctrine of recreational immunity does not apply in this case, where the plaintiff is attending a public school under compulsory education. And in reading it, it seems to be that you argue this compulsory education. You argue, as you just did earlier, that the statute contemplates enter into property to engage in recreational activity. And then you argue, starting on page 8, second, second, you say there's no evidence in the recreational immunity statute of a legislative intent to abrogate the common law duty that school personnel owe to children in their care. Can you just, so I have it clear in my mind, tell me what your main arguments are? I don't mean in terms of explaining them. Just tell me why you think the trial court erred here. 1, 2, 3. What are your arguments?
First of all, if you take a look at the test that this court has used and should apply also in this case, is looking at the totality of the circumstances, the nature and purpose of why Trista Ullman was there. She was there for a school day, to attend school for educational purposes, and recess was a 15-minute interval during that school day. Therefore, under the definition of recreational activity and the test that this court has developed,
it isn't clear. You seem to me, in my mind, I'm blending. You started to talk about she didn't enter the premises for recreational activity. And then it seems to be as you're going into, and she was required to be there and it was compulsory and therefore it wasn't a recreational activity. Okay. Now, am I getting that right?
Well, I think that the fact that it was compulsory...
I'm not asking you to argue it. I just want to know what the arguments are. I mean, is that right? Is that what your arguments are?
Sort of, with the exception of the last part. I think compulsory education, or the fact that you're having an education, is sort of the backdrop of where the court should start analyzing this.
Your argument on page 8 that says, second, there's no evidence in the recreational immunity statute of a legislative intent to abrogate the common law duty that school personnel owe to their children in their care. That's one of your arguments, too?
I Yes, it is. But I think the better argument is looking in terms of the of what Wisconsin statutes say for the duties that school boards have in order to maintain safe premises. There's also, I guess, what you'd call a public policy argument that has been developed in the case law pertaining to the duty that teachers and people who are working at the school have towards students, which is the same as what a parent would, and that's where the duty of supervision comes from. Thank you. In looking at the test that this court has developed in specifically talking about the Linville case, where you have a situation where the mother and her child and the boyfriend are driving to the park to look for fishing spots. And while they're looking for fishing spots, they're along this pond and they get stuck in the mud. And they try and get out and push the van. And as a result of that, the van ends up going into the pond and the child drowns. The child and the boyfriend drowns. And this court said that we're not going to look at what they were doing at that particular time, i.e. pushing the van away from the muck. We're going to look at what were the whole circumstances as to why they came onto the property to begin with, and that was to look for fishing spots. And that is a recreational activity. Likewise, if you take a look at the Hall case that this court decided, if the court recalls, that was a person that was attending a flea market. And as this person is walking through, which is akin to sightseeing, walking through the flea market, he has to take a bathroom break. On his way to the bathroom, he becomes injured. He falls or whatever it was. And the court said there that we're not going to segment out a momentary diversion from what the real purpose of why the person is on the premises. Likewise, in this case, the court should ask itself, what was the real reason that Trista Allman was on the premises? What was she doing when she was on the school playground for recess? She had a lot of options, granted. She could have stood by the school building talking to friends. She could have just stood by the school building waiting for the bell to ring to resume classes. She could have played on the monkey bars that are provided by the school. She could have slid down a snow hill that existed on the playground that she was allowed to do. In any case, in all of those situations, what she's really doing on the property during recess is occupying her time.
What about the activities in a gym?
And activities, would that be an outdoor or indoor? In a gymnasium?
In a gym, yes. They have a basketball court outdoors and they have a basketball court indoors.
I think if the court were to follow the defendant's line of reasoning on this, that recreational immunity would apply to a situation where you have a gym class outside that's part of the school curriculum that is supervised by a teacher. For instance, flag football outside. The other reason, excuse me, that recreational immunity does not apply here is because we have a statute which is in Chapter 120, which says that the school board has a duty to maintain and repair school premises to make them safe. And that's the wording that's used specifically, is safe. And this language clashes head on with the language that's contained in the recreational immunity statute, which says that no owner of property has any duty to maintain premises to make them safe.
Well, you rely on the Bistry case, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And there is viewed as having civil liability, right?
I'm sorry?
And there the statute was interpreted as giving civil liability for violation. Do you have a similar interpretation for 120?
I haven't been able to find any case law, no. In the Bistry case, which of course was a Court of Appeals case, we had a conflict of statutes, which is similar to what we have here, where we had a person who was riding a bicycle on a municipal sidewalk, and the person hit a part of the sidewalk that wasn't maintained properly and was injured when the bike flipped over. And in that case, the Court of Appeals turned to the statute requiring municipalities to maintain their sidewalks and determined that that when a conflict of statutes arises there, what we need to do is to try and harmonize the two statutes. And they decided that in that case, that immunity did not apply because there was a clear legislative intent, assuming that the legislature knows what it's passing and knows what laws are in existence when they pass it. There was a clear legislative intent that municipalities had this duty. Likewise, in this case, we have Chapter 120, which evidences a clear legislative intent to make school boards responsible for maintaining and repairing premises so that they're in a safe condition. Furthermore, in looking at the totality of the circumstances of this case, Trista Allman can be viewed as having a momentary diversion when she was outside for recess, that she was momentarily diverted from the job at hand, which was attending school and receiving an education. And that's consistent with what this court has said, is that we're not going to look at that momentary diversion. We're going to look at the totality of the circumstances as to why the person is there to begin with. Furthermore, this case, this court just decided the case of Minnesota Fire and the paper recycling. And in that case, I'm sorry, it wasn't that case, it was the Urban versus Prosser case, also decided around the same time. And if the court recalls the facts in that situation, we had a person who was walking to a boat slip, and in order to do that, to engage in a recreational activity, he had to walk across property that had an easement on it. And a dog ran after him, and he ran away from the dog, and he jumped down an embankment, and he injured his heel. And in that case, the court said, we're not going to look at what he was doing at the exact moment that he was injured, i.e. walking from one place to another. We're going to look at what was this person doing here to begin with. Well, he was walking across this property in order to get to his boat slip so that he could engage in boating, which is a recreational activity. Likewise, in the present case, this court should follow the same type of analysis and not part and parcel out what Trista Allman was doing at the exact moment of her injury. The fact is that recess is inextricably connected to the school day. It is part and parcel of the school day. And when a student comes on to the school's property for purposes of education, that's not a recreational activity. Because they're taking a momentary diversion where they're required to be outside for recess, that's a momentary diversion from the real purpose for them being on school property.
Counsel, as I understand your brief, although you don't get into this in any depth, you've taken the position, have you not, that even if there's recreational immunity here, that you still would have a valid claim for negligent supervision? Can you explain to me how you get to that conclusion?
Okay. I think there's kind of two ways that plaintiff comes to that situation. The first is arising from Chapter 120, where you have the wording that requires school boards to keep premises maintained and repaired in a safe condition. When we have a snow hill in Wisconsin, we have a temporary condition. It's something that's going to change. Either snow is going to fall on it, and it's going to change the composition of the hill, and eventually it's going to melt. When you have a temporary condition that can't really feasibly or practically be remedied by, let's say, having the janitor go out there and scoop all the snow out of the snow hill so that now it's level, moving the snow out of there, you have an immediate, more practical remedy of making sure that those kids that you put on the playground that have to be out there at recess aren't going to go onto the snow hill and be injured. It would be the same situation as if the school were had to dig a new well, and they have this enormous hole on the property. The duty of the school district is to either barricade the area so that students aren't going to play and get hurt on that hole, fall into the hole, or they have to watch the students, they have to supervise the students. The other way I get there, Justice Brooks, is by virtue of the common law that makes teachers and other people at the school, employees of the school, with the same duty that parents have to supervise their children when they're in their home or whatnot.
Well, if they're immune, aren't they immune? I mean, how do you take the position that on one side there's let's assume we find recreational immunity, and yet on the other side, even though they've got recreational immunity, what you're saying is they're not immune because they still have this duty of supervision. But how do you get over recreational immunity? What is it that we do as a court that gets us to this duty of supervision?
That was my first point, which was looking at the nature, the consequence, and the purpose, which is the test that this court developed in order to determine whether a particular activity is recreational in nature, and therefore whether it falls within the purview of the statute.
Well, I think another way of stating the question is, what sort of liability does this statute immunize against? Let's say, as Justice Brooks posited, that we find that this was a recreational activity, because after all, she was engaged in a form of sweating, right? And sweating is one of the enumerated activities in the definition of recreational activity. And let's assume that we do not adopt your argument that that was not why she was on the premises. In other words, she didn't enter the premises for the purpose of engaging in sledding, and that was something that she was doing incidental to her presence there as a member of the student body. So we find that recreational immunity does apply. What does it apply to? What does it immunize against? Liability for liability of the school district in all senses, or liability of the school district only insofar as conditions of property are concerned?
I think that it's talking about the supervision. If I understand the question correctly, we're talking about a duty of supervision and a duty to maintain or repair premises as being two duties that a school district can have. If the court finds that recreational immunity does apply, I think then you have a situation where there's no immunity.
I'm not clear on your answer. What I'm getting at is the secondary question that the Court of Appeals asked us to address, which is, even assuming that recreational immunity applies here and immunizes the school district for liability stemming from the hazardous condition on the property, snowbank, the hole in the snowbank? Does it also immunize the school district from liability for negligent supervision of the recess monitor, the teacher who was out on the playground, monitoring the playground?
I contend that it doesn't.
Does that mean we have to overrule the language in Johnson versus City of Burlington that says that it does apply to that sort of liability, liability for negligent supervision and training?
Well, I'm asking the court to adopt our reasoning, which is that recreational immunity doesn't apply.
I understand that, but let's say we don't.
Right.
And we have to get to the second question that the Court of Appeals asked us to get to.
I think that, under recreational immunity, that if it applies, that it applies to supervision, it applies to maintenance and repair.
You think it immunizes against all forms of liability?
I think it does.
Okay.
I see I'm out of time, so I'll defer to
You have several minutes left until the red light comes on, then you get 5 minutes rebuttal, just to spread.
Counsel, I took that question certified by the Court of Appeals to raise a legitimate question of whether or not recreational immunity, a statute, can abrogate the common law duty, got lots of cases, common law duty that teachers owe a, or supervisors of school districts, owe a duty of care to exercise reasonable care for the students they have under their care. Is it your, so how do you answer that question? Does recreational immunity, does the statute 895.52 abrogate the common law statute, or the common law, rather, that says a teacher has a duty to exercise reasonable care over the children in their charge?
It does not.
Tell me why it doesn't.
Because when we look at the test that we have to apply in defining what is a recreational activity and why Trista Allman was on this property to begin with, coupled with the policy reasons that we need to encourage safe recesses, then the common law duties that a teacher or supervisor would have should not be abrogated. I am out of time now, so I'll defer to opposing counsel. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Aberg, representing the school district of Stanley Boyd.
Good morning. Before I begin, I'd like to introduce to the court attorney Ted Fisher, who's sitting at counsel table. Marshall was kind enough to let him. Mr. Fisher was a longtime city attorney for the city of Eau Claire and now working for a law firm. If I could follow up with Justice Bradley's last point, I think the idea of whether the duties are abrogated is not really quite the right word. The question is whether the statute limits what the liability is, and I think it certainly limits that any immunity statute would. In looking through some of the cases and looking at the decision which this court rendered in the paper recycling case, it was pointed out that every outdoor activity is not a recreational activity. So to the extent that you're not dealing with recreational activity, obviously immunity does not apply. Whatever standard of care or duties teachers may have to their students or to others is still in place.
But in the concurring opinion that someone wrote in that case, that concurring opinion took the position that with rare exception, a recreational activity could be found to exist in that laundry list in all of the idle time that kids have outside.
Well, I think the decision should was written by Justice Crooks took that into account in terms of looking at delineating the test that was originally brought forward by the court in Lindell and also in the Sievert analysis. And then as it has gone through, obviously the place where the court and the most contention has come is what is a recreational activity. And the court has developed kind of a balancing test and looking at the totality of those circumstances. And in the case of the paper recycling, unfortunately involved in the death, but also on the revenue roll, Justice Crooks indicated that we have to look at a reasonable person standard, not a reasonable child's, if you, in evaluating the totality of the circumstances to make that decision.
Let me ask, because it isn't clear to me, in response to the question that I had asked your opposing counsel, then you've come up to the plate and answered it, and you said, no, it, in essence, it doesn't abrogate the common law duty to exercise reasonable care for those in your students in your charge, but it limits it. What is left of common law duty that a teacher on the recess supervising the students has to exercise due care for those students during recess? What's left of it?
Well, I thought of it, tried to think of examples last night as I was preparing this to, well, if you're not dealing with recreational injuries, what else are you dealing with? And I take it that's where the question is. Again, going back, outdoor activities don't necessarily have to be recreational. I think one of the things that you need
to... about for kids on a playground during recess.
Sure. But it was pointed out by counsel for the appellant that there's a lot of things that could have been done. She chose to slide it. No. Those other things that could have happened are the reason why school districts have aides and people out there looking after kids include various purposes. But you could have a medical emergency for a child that occurs, for example, outside that doesn't have anything to do with recreational injury. Obviously, at that point in time, the school district has to exercise some care to help out the child. If a fight would break out among those students, that's another place where an injury could potentially occur. Or
well, why would they be required to separate someone fighting on the playground?
Well, I think in terms of looking at what the common law duty is and why they were there, they are there to overlook what has happened. Part of that is a safety concern. I'm not going to say it's not.
That's what I'm exploring. You're suggesting they would have a duty to break up a fight on a playground.
Well, I think there's a duty that you would have that's outside of recreational immunity. So if you're not dealing with a recreational activity, recreational immunity doesn't come into play.
Let's say the kids are wrestling and boxing. And, hey, everyone, let's gang up on Andy. Isn't this fun?
Well, I think there is a duty to go ahead and try and do something to break that up. There is a duty to maintain peace. Now, one of the other things that I had thought of, in addition to what we're talking about here, is there is concern about adults being on the school ground when they're not supposed to be there, whether they might be trying to peddle drugs, whether they might be trying to kidnap a child, things of that nature. So there are things that happen outside that are not recreational and are not affected by the immunity analysis which we engage in here. Now, as I understand...
Counsel, yes. Before you go, I have to leave early. I will be continuing to participate in the case, so I want to ask you one question.
Yes.
The problem that I have with your case is that if we say there is recreational immunity here, it seems to me that the school districts no longer have any duty to maintain their monkey bars, the steps leading up to their slide, the chains or the ropes that hold on to the swings. Doesn't that necessarily follow?
No, I don't think that it does. The reason it doesn't is that's not the facts of this case. The facts of this case don't have anything to do with a building or appurtenance or apparatus or facility. They have to do with naturally occurring
snow conditions on a hill. Now, I understand that the top of the hill, there was snow piled up from shoveling the sidewalk. It was about 2 feet tall.
Are you saying that if she was injured on a slide, it would be different than if she's injured sliding down a snowbank?
Well, I was going to say, here's why I think that the fact difference might be different if we're talking about a piece of equipment. There are the safety statutes that were pointed out in the amicus brief, which do provide an affirmative duty for the district to go ahead and maintain certain things. And in that particular case, there may, and I don't know that this is the case, but there might be a conflict between those statutes and the immunity statute. If that is the case, then that conflict has to be resolved. And the statutes have to be harmonized to the extent that they can be. And then statutory construction would be interposed and so forth. But I don't think that we have that here. And I certainly don't think that the conflict has been developed. I think Justice Abramson asked if there were any cases about Chapter 120 that would support the argument that you'd have a lawsuit. If, in fact, you didn't maintain, I'm not sure exactly how you would maintain the snowfield here. The suggestion is that it would be barricaded. I don't know if that's practically possible. But in any event, that's an analysis that I don't think we need to get into here, and that's why I don't think, at least from our viewpoint, should not be a troubling aspect of making a decision in this case. And I think granting immunity would not necessarily lead to the result that you would fear.
Counsel, excuse me. Could I ask Abbott, who's leaving, and I just want to see if you've finished his question. My question is, it seems to me that the argument is made, we're looking at a compulsory school attendance. We, opposing counsel, discussed this. And when you look at 895 and the legislative purpose behind that is to open up lands. This court has had many cases. I've been here 10 years and I've seen a number of them. And familiar with the case involving the cross situation and other things. But here it seems to me that the argument could be made that a mandatory recess certainly is not a recreational activity because it's a compulsory attendance. This person had to be there. We have a compulsory attendance law in the state of Wisconsin. Why not just say, well, that's it? In other words, in those situations, recreational immunity, that's what I think the opposing counsel at least posited one of those. That's the line that this court should draw. What's wrong with that? Because the conflicting legislative intent, I don't see that there's a great conflict.
I guess I would answer it this way, Justice Wilcox. I was going to follow up with a question that I believe Justice Crooks had for closing counsel. And that is with respect to if this happened outside the school hours, would immunity apply? And I believe the answer was that yes, it would. So the only difference that I can detect then from the position that she's taking by saying that is that it's, aside from the time of day and so forth, this fact that school is in session, which gets to the point that you're talking about. Now, I think what that
well, that seems to be a clear line, and
right.
I would just say that certainly, you know, a lot of schools have, quote, school forests, and
right.
I can imagine someone hunting in a school forest where I would think their recreational immunity would apply because it's not necessarily a school activity. It's not during the compulsory hours. And this just seemed to me to be a possible clear, bright line.
Yeah. I guess my response is, as I wanted to continue, as I understand the argument in looking at the brief, the reply brief from the appellant, is that because there's this compelled attendance, there was never any intent on Trista Ahman's part to be involved in recreational activity. The main purpose, or the primary purpose, is for her to attend the school.
But as part of school council, I don't want to block. You have recess, you have FIED,
right.
And as the suggestion was made here, does it make any difference, as asked your opposing counsel, what's indoor or outdoor? If you have a gym outdoors, does this mean that it's treated differently?
Well, I think there is a difference because you have an outdoor activity as opposed to an indoor activity. And obviously, we're talking about outdoor recreational activities here. I guess the reason why I think that the fact that compulsory attendance is not, or this fact that she didn't intend to go there for the purpose of recreating.
She did not intend?
Well, that's my, that she wasn't going to the school for the purpose of recreating.
Not solely, but I think remembering back to my days, I'm sure others on this board would say that was perhaps my primary intent in going to school, but people have different objectives.
Well, but I guess I would say that maybe she didn't want to go to school anyway, or didn't want to go to school. But the point is this, I think what it does, if you're looking at the totality of the circumstances, it really elevates intent to a dispositive level, which I think all of the decisions of this court reject. In looking at the totality of the circumstances, they would have to look at all of the issues, including the subjective intent. My argument, the one that I make in my brief, is the fact that you may, in fact, have gone to property with the intent of attending school, but the purpose of recess, generally, is to go outside and have fun and play. And once she was outside, she had an intent to recreate, because as counsel for appellant pointed out, there's lots of things that she could have done that would have been outdoor activities, but not recreational activities.
Counsel.
So there's a choice there that has been made, and recreation is being engaged in. And if you look at the legislative intent in the Act, the first line says the legislature intends by this Act to limit the liability of property owners towards others who use their property for recreational activities. And I think that's the important part of it.
So let me just bring this argument. If it's a landowner and he or she leases out land and do it for more than $500, you lose your recreational immunity. Here you have there are exceptions to all of these rules, and certainly I couldn't imagine that the legislative intent would be have this situation to say, no, now you lose, recreational immunity would apply under a compulsory school attendance.
Well, I think one of the things, and I was also thinking about this issue, is, why, you get this from the question from the Court of Appeals, is, kind of was it in the mind of the legislature to talk about schools? And I think that it specifically is. They mention educational activity in the enumerated part of activities in the definition section of 895.52. And in fact, talk about practice and instruction of outdoor activities, sports, and so forth. So I think it was in the mind of the legislature, and certainly in the definition section of talking about governmental bodies, certainly school districts are there. There hasn't been any suggestion here that there is a statutory exception to immunity, and there hasn't been any suggestion that the school district is not properly entitled as a school district to claim recreational immunity in this case. The only question that has come up is, this is not a recreational activity because it's during school session, and this is a momentary diversion from the main topic of that, which is to get an education.
I have a question.
Yes.
Justice Bradley does too. Suppose a school teacher who's on duty at recess engages in part of the recess activities and tosses back a ball to a student and is negligent in the toss and hits the kid in the head, causing personal injury. Okay. School district liable?
Well, again, you'd have to, I think the test is going to be the same regardless of any fact situation that you come up with. And I don't know if I can answer that, but I guess what I would say is certainly I think you would be entitled in good faith to make that claim. And depending on how all the other facts...
All the facts are the same here. We're at recess, it's on, during the school period, what I'm driving at is the second question that's asked by the Court of Appeals. Now, I've been looking at 895.52 paren 7 paren. It says, except as expressly provided in this section, and I'm going to leave out the next few bullets, except as expressly provided in this section, and the section doesn't say anything about this school teacher being negligent. Nothing in this section, which is the recreational immunity, nothing in the recreational immunity law creates any duty of care. So it doesn't create any duty of care on the part of the teacher. And then it says, or ground of liability toward any person who uses another's property for recreational activity. So it says, except as expressly provided, nothing in the recreational immunity statute creates a ground of liability toward any person who uses another property. So there's nothing in this that creates a ground of liability. But there is, and I think this question has been asked in several ways, there is a common law obligation of individuals not to be negligent.
Yes.
The statute talks in terms of making exceptions for malicious activity, but it's only on failure to warn, not actually an affirmative act. So the question is, and you and your opposing counsel have been emphasizing recreational immunity, arguing about whether it is or isn't recreational immunity, but there's another issue here about negligent supervision. Now, I think it was Linville, in one of the cases, the employee, the lifeguard, was badly trained and was negligent, didn't go out and do a rescue, right? Was it Linville?
I think Linville is the one where the child in the van, and then there were a number of
which
different...
Which is rescues. The one with the Kenosha? Kenosha. You think this is like Kenosha?
Well, I think it is in some respects, but addressing your comments about subsection 7 of the statute, I think what they're saying there is, look, nothing in this statute, this immunity statute, creates any statutory duty. We're not imposing a statutory duty. Nothing can be read there to put that in there.
But this what is about the other track?
Well, with respect to the second question, which I understand Justice Abramson is getting at,
right,
with regard to supervision, that is addressed in my brief, and I think the analysis in the Linville case is the one where the court looked at, and just so I can quote this is Linville at... The 718, the legislature in section 895.52 granted immunity to landowners with respect to the condition of the land and to the landowners or its employees' actions with respect to the land. So I think with respect to, again, going to the hypothetical that you issued and also the second question from the Court of Appeals, I don't think that the school district is precluded from making an argument that recreational immunity applies. Whether it does or not would have to be figured out. I also think it wouldn't preclude them from making an argument that governmental immunity under 893.80(3) or 4 would also apply. And I know that that's not an issue before the court at this time, but I think that those are certainly things that in good faith the school district could in fact make an argument for.
So what's the answer in this case?
Pardon me?
What's the answer to the Court of Appeals question in this case, then? Is there immunity against both claims?
The one for negligent maintenance of the property and the one for negligent supervision?
I believe in this case there is, yes, on both bases.
And what's your argument as to part two of that? Why is there immunity against negligence for negligent supervision under the statute?
Well, the argument I made in the brief is that this was kind of akin with respect to issues in the Kenosha case where you had the lifeguards, and this was part of the, they were guarding, if you will, the land that was where the immunity arose from. And we have a similar situation here. The immunity arises from the property owned by the school district, which in fact is where the people who are supervising the activities are. So they're tied to the land and the activities on the land. And so that's my argument, that in fact immunity is stretched to cover those people with respect to those activities. And I think in this case, as I said before, with respect to any hypothetical, I think you could make a good faith argument for it. Here I think they definitely apply on both grounds. I think in answering the Court of Appeals' first question, I think the legislature definitely had school districts in mind when it passed 8952, even being mindful of the common law duties that administrators and teachers and aides might have to students. But I think also with respect to the second issue as well, the Linville analysis that this court went through, I think is going to come to the same conclusion that they did in Kenosha, which is to find that immunity for those people is involved here, and that negligent supervision is not a claim that can be made in this particular instance.
Counsel, I was asking this question before about negligent supervision on a playground, you talked about drugs and kids being kidnapped or medical emergency. Let me kind of recast another question asked. Yesterday was a beautiful day in Wisconsin. I'm a Phi Ed teacher. We're playing tag inside the gym. I have a duty to supervise, common law duty to use reasonable care in the supervision of the kids, right?
Yes.
So pretty out. Let's go outside playing the same tag game. Do I have a common law duty to use reasonable care in the supervision of those kids?
Well, I don't think you ever lose the duty. The question is whether you have a defense if an injury occurs of immunity that would limit your liability. And I think if, in fact, you make the analysis, you know, using the facts and laying them out, you can always make the argument that I think in almost any case, if it's anywhere close to an outdoor recreational activity, that yes, immunity under 895.52 may apply in those particular instances.
So, and I think you correctly clarified my question. You're talking about immunity from liability. If I'm playing tag, kids are playing tag inside, there may be governmental immunity, but setting that aside, we're talking about that I would not have immunity. But the same game of tag outside, the school district would have the umbrella of recreational immunity.
I think they could make that argument, yes.
What do you mean they could make their argument?
It seems
to me the answer is yes.
Well, as I said before, I mean,
unless it was drugs, kidnapping, or medical emergency.
Well, I didn't mean to limit it. I don't mean to limit it. I'm just saying those are outdoor activities that are recreational. Every time you have a recreational activity, if it's determined in fact, if there's even a question about it.
If kids are standing
are you saying it's a recreational activity?
If kids are standing around talking to each other, is that, during recess, is that a recreational activity?
I think that's kind of a close question. That's one of the things that I've looked about and thought about. I think that's one where you'd have to kind of balance things out because generally, and I know the court has looked at breaking this down in the definition section of what is a recreational activity. It has two broad definitions and it has a list of enumerated activities. And the problem is trying to fit whatever activity that isn't specifically enumerated, is it going to fit within those definitions, broad and specific?
Because it includes the definition of not only exercise, but relaxation or pleasure.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. And then, so the court and the legislature has said, look, we're listing a group of specific activities, and what we want the courts to do is, if there is something that is substantially similar to that activity, or substantially similar to activities that would occur at that particular location, or under those circumstances, then we want the courts to liberally apply immunity. So again, I think that's another one where you could make an argument for immunity, but that might be a much closer call than the one we have here. To me, there's just not any dispute that we're dealing with recreational activity if we have a kid sliding on snow. It's unfortunate that she was injured. I certainly respect that. And the school district doesn't want to see any of its students injured. So, you know, it's one of those things, however, that happens no matter how much you may want to prevent it and no matter how much you may do to actually try and prevent it. I think the facts in this case indicate that Trista was instructed on a number of different occasions not to play on the hill, but continually did so. And I think one of the distinctions that was made in terms of the aide who was watching at the time of the injury, one of the distinctions she made is, I didn't think it was quite as dangerous because there weren't a lot of kids pushing each other, which was apparently what had been happening before. And so she didn't think it was, that particular moment anyway, was not as a dangerous situation as it was when kids were pushing each other around.
Justice Bablish asked you about the disincentive to maintain the monkey bars if you prevail here. And you said, well, that's different. That's sort of a man-made structure. What about the Lasky case where the city of Stevens Point had a bridge and someone just walking over the bridge and an alleged recreational activity, and it collapsed? I mean, don't you see the linkage there?
I guess I'm not familiar with the facts of that case, and therefore I really don't feel qualified to make an answer to that, I guess, to that question. My view of this case, in thinking about my argument here today, is that if you look at the statute itself, which does limit liability, it doesn't abrogate duties. What has happened is there is actually a statutory balance, Justice Abramson has noted, within the text of the statute itself, which balances the interests of people who are injured and property owners. And there also, this court has determined through various cases that there is a balancing that will go on in determining whether there's recreational activity or not. And that's really what we're faced with in the particular facts of this case. And I think once the court goes through that exercise, and I don't think, especially in light of Justice Crook's decision in the paper recycling case, adding that we're talking about not what a reasonable child standard is, but what a reasonable adult standard is, all of the elements that are necessary to make an evaluation of whether immunity should apply to the facts of this case are present and have been developed by this court and can be applied. I know Justice Wilcox has mentioned that, is there a bright line because she's being compelled to attend? I don't think so, again, because I think that elevates intent into a dispositive factor with respect to the totality of the circumstances test. And there, I guess, it would be a situation is whenever you would have a recess and a recreational injury that occurred in recess, then no school district in this state would be immune from liability under recreational immunity. And I would submit that if that occurs, then I think school districts will think very seriously about abolishing outdoor recess because there's no way to prevent or control kids from running over a large area. The only way they're going to be able to do that is to have them inside. If the court grants immunity, however, the situation will remain the same. The fact that if immunity is granted here doesn't mean that the school district is all of a sudden going to pull its aides, which it had out there before with the idea that it had immunity in place, that they're all of a sudden going to just say, well, we're not responsible for anybody, so we're going to pull everybody in and we're not going to watch out what happens on the playground. That's not what is going to happen. What happened before is going to continue to happen. However, if in this particular instance, if the court makes a determination that if a recreational injury occurs during recess, there is no immunity, I think most school districts are going to look very long and hard about saying no more outdoor recess. And not only that, we will not allow access to school property because, of course, they do not have to allow access to that property. They can keep people from going in there. I see my time is up.
Mr. Aper.
Yes.
Recess is not a new concept. I mean, I suspect that recess has been around the entire history of the state of Wisconsin. But recreational immunity for recess strikes me as something that you're arguing that is a new departure, isn't it?
I don't think so. And, you know, in fact, if you look at the argument that's being made by appellant's counsel, I think one of the things they're saying there is, in essence, this is an educational activity. In fact, the amicus brief suggests it's part of the curriculum. If you look at the public instruction administrative regulations, it counts recess as part of contact time or time in school, or maybe for kids, time served. But in any event, if you go, I think, along that line, then it certainly fits within educational activity, which is specifically enumerated in the definition section of the statute. And I think that that, you know, it seems to me that a lot of the argument is kind of leading toward that. I guess I always looked at it more along the lines of, look, I mean, she went out to recess to go out and have fun. She had a choice in what she could do and decided to slide down a hill. To me, that indicates recreational activity for which the school district in this particular case should have immunity. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Knox-Barrow.
I just had a couple of things that I wanted, to address in light of opposing counsel's presentation. The first thing is, we are encouraging safe recesses by following the line of reasoning that we've put forth before the court. It's not a choice between no recess and having recess. It's a choice between having safe recess or unsafe recess. And if the court adopts the position that recreational immunity does apply here and the school district is immune for Trista Allman's injury or for lack of supervision or for failure to maintain or repair the premises in a safe condition or to exercise reasonable care for these kids, then the court is by public policy discouraging safe recesses because there is no meaningful distinction to be made between a child that is standing next to the door to the school during recess and an icicle falls down on her head because the school has failed to clear its eaves trough up. There's no difference between not granting immunity in that case because she's not engaged in a recreational activity between that situation and the situation we have here in our case where we have her sliding down a snow hill or, let's say, in a hypothetical case of another child who slips off of a defective monkey bar and is injured. There's no meaningful distinction to be made there. There's no clear line to be made there. And if the court adopts the defense position on it, then what we'll be saying is that we have a situation where it applies if the student engages in this particular activity during recess, but not in this other activity during recess. And that isn't a prudent test to follow. That isn't a consistent application of the law. And it simply doesn't make sense to do that. The assertion is that we're going to discourage schools, or we're going to cause schools, by not applying recreational amenity here, from having recess, and they're going to get rid of recess. Now let's analyze this very carefully. What if the court applies recreational immunity here, if the court does not apply recreational immunity here and Trista Allman is allowed to proceed with this? The school, as far as I can see, has three options. First of all, they can eliminate all sort of school recess altogether. Whether it's indoor recess or it's outdoor recess, we can just have those kids go to school from 9 o'clock in the morning until 3 in the afternoon with constant classes. We'll let them have a break for lunch, but no recess. Not going to let them play in the gym indoors. We're not going to let them play outside. Well, common sense and past experience in education has shown us that this doesn't work. Recess serves an educational purpose because it allows children a break. They need to have some physical activity. They need to get up and run around. They need to recharge their battery so that when they come back to class, they're going to be fresh and ready to learn again, and it facilitates their education and their learning. And it helps teachers with behavior problems to have recess. So that's not really a viable option. The second thing the schools could do is just eliminate outdoor recess. We could still have our recesses. We'll have 15 minutes in the morning, we'll have 15 minutes in the afternoon, but we're going to have them indoor. Well, you know, that might be okay. But then the problem with that is that, you know, at some point the facility of the school becomes so small because you got to put these kids somewhere. You got to, if you're going to have them in the school, having a recess break for 15 minutes to run around and play ball, jump rope, talk to their friends, whatever they're going to do to recreate, then we're going to have a situation where we can handle these kids. So again, not a real practical option. The third option that the school district has, if it's not given immunity, is to keep things the way they are. To keep having outdoor recess, but to exercise reasonable care in the supervision of the students during recess, and to make sure that that playground is reasonably safe for those children to play on. And that seems to me to be an important public policy that we want to encourage in our public schools.
Elsa, your red light's on. Do you have anything you have to add?
I don't have anything else. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. That concludes our argument in 002376 FT, Allman versus School District of Stanley Boyd.